Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Canis Albinus.
Perhaps I should go to the first topic that's actually related to something the show is intended to discuss.
No, don't do that.
Oh, okay. Well, we can keep talking about this if you prefer.
You want to ask what is love?
Baby Paul.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 220. I'm Canis Albinus, and I'm guest hosting today with our regulars Dan Q.
Warp speed!
Makalua.
Still need more caffeine, thank you.
The Mian Team.
I have captured greatness in a bottle.
And Mad Jin.
I'm here.
You captured Mad Jin in a bottle?
Did I say that? Because I meant to.
Yeah, I don't think so.
If this is a song segue, you can forget it.
Well, genie, bottle, it just kind of came to mind.
Oh, genie, oh, geez.
Mackie wants some Polycast fanfic, apparently.
Wait.
What?
That's hot.
No.
I don't write that kind of fanfic. So-
Got a Mega Bears fan article here on Japan. I think what you really want to go for anytime you're playing as Japan is to get as far in the technology tree as possible and build giant death robots.
Oh, giant death robots that are still at 100% strength even when they only have a few hit points left. Oh my god.
Yes, Shudo unique ability. Units fight as though they were at full strength even when damaged. And of course, some people listening to this are going to be like, why is this new? Okay, well, that's not what's new about Japan from the fall Brave New World patch.
No.
But it was worthwhile mentioning because it's been a while since we've talked about Japan specifically. But what is new?
Anyway, plus one culture from fishing boats and plus two culture from each atoll.
Yes.
And samurais also have a new ability now. Samurai? That was required. Can now construct fishing boats without consuming themselves. That would have been awful, by the way. But funny.
Yeah.
What a weird ability. That's kind of amazing, though.
And the other thing is that they obsolete at rifling and they upgrade to riflemen instead of muskets. Because, you know, they're better than muskets.
Yes, you can still go out and construct workboats, and you will still have to construct a workboat if you want to improve an oil platform, samurai. But it does help when, besides the kind of the obvious, when you have that one tile, that one water tile that you would like to improve, but you can't quite get to it with a boat, but guess what? Samurai can go on land, and then into the water, and then back again. And then they can get access to those that you would not otherwise be able to get to. And hey, you can also use them to help repair pillaged fish boats as well.
Yes. So... there you go.
Always useful having one or two of them around. And then
Well, not build expensive workboats.
Yeah.
As much as samurai really are meant for fighting, once you pass that whole period of time where you have them, you might as well build one that can just medic or soak damage or whatever and just run around building fishing boats. Though the one point, fact that atoll culture is not converted to tourism since it's not an improvement. So don't expect that your atolls are going to give you extra tourism later, but the fishing boats that give you culture will get converted to tourism. So you do want a heavy fishery type area, though atolls tend to be minimal on the map. So, you know, it's nice for an early game start culture push, but it's not really a long-term thing.
Yeah, it's very situational. Don't expect that you're going to be able to take advantage of that all of the time, but you should be able to take advantage of the fishing thing, you know, unless you disable start bias or something crazy like that. I mean, who would ever do such thing?
Great Plains map.
Well. Yeah. There's still water on that.
Yeah, but you don't always spawn next to it, especially without start bias.
And there may not be a lot of water-based resources to improve.
Yeah.
And on a Great Plains map, if you're on the same map as Venice, they're going to get the coast and not you.
Yes.
But then you can just push yourself the way through and get yourself samurai and go take them.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Then you'd only have that tough choice in the early game on building fish boats or not, because that's a really tough choice.
And as much as you can be all push, push, push for the military, you can have a very good offensive defense as well. Plus the fact that if you wanted to be on the defense and go on the offense at the same time, you could do so and not have to field quite as many units because of the fact that the Japanese units, again, fight as though they were at full strength even when damaged.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the Zero, which is slightly modified.
It needed it.
Yeah, it needed to be thrown out and new unit given, but... Or something.
Ninja.
No, Mackie.
You know, there's the expression, you are what you eat. This unit used to be what it was called.
Yeah. Yeah, so it no longer requires oil, which means you can just mass spam these things now. Not that you would ever have done that before. But because of Bushido and oil and lack of oil, you can have like a few of these things up on the map. On every city, and like if you have two and then you go for the second interception bonus with your fighters, then they will intercept at 100% chance no matter what, because they start at 150%, etc., etc., and they get bonus versus other fighters.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to help you against stealth bombers, but if you're being, what is the word I'm looking for, attacked by stealth bombers, you probably have greater problems that you need to think about.
Yeah, you
especially
probably
if you're trying to use zeros to defend yourself at that stage of the game.
That too.
That is a bit of an issue. Of course, since the AI really sucks at using air still, you'd probably really want just a bunch of bombers.
I might be more inclined and very happy to have zeros if I was, say, you know, in a multiplayer game.
Yes.
Competitive multiplayer game. And it'd be like, let's go on an advanced start as well, and I'll be Japan. Okay.
You were killed by a nuke. Take that. Yeah. Intercept this.
Those are good for combating Japan Zeros. There's also the anti-aircraft gun. I mean, I know it's defensive only, but still, you know, a little earlier on, or if you find yourself you don't have a lot of sources of uranium. But you could also have some artillery, rocket artillery, battleships, missile cruisers as well. And actually, depending upon where Japan is located, the battleships and missile cruisers might be preferable actually to artillery and rocket artillery, because you don't have to worry about landing them and then setting up and getting squished as easily.
Yeah, you just have to worry about the fact that air units can get anti-naval promotions. But if you're going after Japan in the water, I'm betting they also have battleships and missile cruisers too. So, yeah, it's going to be a big fight.
Whatever era you are in, you want to go after Japan, make sure that you're an era ahead, ideally.
Not really. I mean, the samurai are nice and stuff, but as per everything related to that, they get wrecked by ranged units, because Bushido does not help versus ranged. Haha.
Yeah, you would be able to use that, but then the AI or whoever is going to take their turn, and they come in with those units and go squish. I'm not saying you have to, but I think it's a big advantage, especially as the game goes on, to be an era ahead. Doesn't mean that you have to necessarily all of a sudden have all of your units reflective of that era, but anything else that you're pushing out, anything that you want to give yourself on the front line, essentially, the sooner that you can destroy these units, the better, because the one thing that the Japanese unique ability does not allow you to do is to have dead units attack as though they were still alive.
And yes, Madden, you are technically incorrect there in saying that Bushido does not help against ranged. It does not help with defending against ranged.
Yeah. Okay. But one assumes that you put something in front of it that can take a hit.
Yeah. Although that something still has to be around, you know, having some, like, on death's door melee unit come up and gank a ranged unit because it has Bushido is probably a slight consideration. Not actually impactful in the majority of games, but, you know, it would be bad to forget it and lose a unit because you forgot it. So,
yeah. Yep. And also note, Bushido does not stack with Autocracy's Elite Forces tenant, just like it never stacked before Brave New World. If you're going Autocracy with Japan, just don't take that one.
Not only is it wasted because it's not going to give you an advantage, but you just wasted a social policy or another tenant. Good job.
Yeah. The way Elite Forces work, it just kind of bumps you up the list. So the whole math sort of thing, every amount if you're down some hit points, your damage, your normal strength percent goes down based on whatever your hit points is for your ratio.
Well, yeah, you can see it. If you look at Mega Bears Fan's article, you can see the normal percent damage versus what Elite Forces and Bushido does. I guess my point is it would be kind of silly if you could do more damage when injured than not, which is the only way I could see them stacking. That would be fun to play with, admittedly, but...
It's something people have been thinking stacked for a very, very long time, but still hasn't stacked ever. But it's okay. One thing that's actually, I don't think he listed it in here, is that horse units are kind of brutal as Japan because of Bushido. Bushido Knights, since they always fight at full strength, on defense, since they never get defensive bonuses, they'll at least still fight at full damage.
He does mention horse units, but mentions them in the section about how to fight Japan. He says, use charge.
Yeah. Okay. They can be useful. The charge does offset some damage, because charge does more damage to wounded units, and Bushido only helps the one unit, but you're still wounded, so yeah, charge will give a good bonus.
I do enjoy the mention about, with regards to playing as Japan, unfortunately city-states don't seem to take Bushido into consideration when determining whether to be afraid. So you will be any more effective at demanding tribute from city-states than you would be with any other equivalent military force. Okay, why would I choose this civ then? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Obviously, you should just play as the Mongols.
Mega Bears fan mentions if you're going war, Statue of Zeus, Great Wall, Hajime Castle, and of course in the National Heroic Epic. And then if you're going peaceful, Sistine Chapel, Sydney Opera House, and of course Hermitage, which seems pretty straightforward. You know, Statue of Zeus, was it 15% greater attack when cities?
15.
And the Great Wall?
Dan's favorite. They need to bring that into Beyond Earth so I can build it for Dan and Alan.
Yeah.
I think that would be called the Great Fence.
Yeah, the Great Wall goes fast on
great
upper
sonic
difficulty
fence.
Levels. One thing he does mention in here, and it's kind of one of these things, Japan is an iron-related civ. So just like Rome, if you get to bronze working and there is no iron anywhere near you, no, just go to university, skip steel, and go do something different and pretend that you actually are playing a civ that has no bonuses.
Well, it's also if you've explored effectively and you know Japan's territory and what they can settle towards and where their iron resources are, then you can be like, okay, do I really need to worry about them fielding something coming towards me? And if so, I know where to try to go to first so I can sit on it and go squish.
Mm-hmm. Or go stop at that city and actually be able to have some yourselves.
That would be preferable. But yep. Of course, if they get there first, then in this case, well, okay.
You still get Bushido, so you can still use other units to go puppet a city that an AI took your iron, and then eventually use that iron to go make your own samurai.
I mean, once you hit the industrial era, well...
Well, it's too late for that.
But up to that point, and that's a pretty significant portion of the game, pre-industrial, unless you do this advanced start thing we referred to before, but why would you do that?
No. But yeah, if you start in ancient, like normal people... Early bronze working is very important.
And because Japan has this incredible fighting ability, whether it's going on the offensive or the defensive, you're going to be able to generate great generals, probably more than you would otherwise. You might find yourself in one of these rare situations where maybe that you have too many, and or situationally, oh, look at this. I really need to protect this iron, so maybe, you know, a hex or two around it, I'll station some units, and boom! Citadel, just to be able to entrench yourself that much more. Nice for choke points.
Samurai also generate great generals faster.
Yeah. So yeah, use them constantly. And he goes and talks about, you know, you can cheese up perpetual war against the city-state, just leaving your samurai next to them and let them generate more generals as they get shot. And then there is a tourism-related thing where you can plant citadels near your cities and get tourism from the citadels. So if you do happen to have way too many generals, you can just make your lands very, very dangerous for anybody to try and invade by dropping citadels everywhere and getting tourism off it. Though you don't get very much. I think you just get like two.
As towards going a diplomatic victory, Mega Bears fan notes, you can use your military to attack other warmonger civilizations and liberate the capitals of other civs and or city-states. Well, I would just say you could use your military to attack other civilizations full stop, necessarily warmongers, but okay. And this can earn you some easy friends that will help you towards diplomatic victory. But then, of course, just be sure that you don't capture any cities that you can't liberate back to its original owner.
Yes, that's using the military to get friends. If you keep it, you won't get friends.
I don't know. You have a pretty solid foundation when everyone in the world loves you because you're the only one in the world.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a Diplo victory.
Or you can just help one civ wipe out another civ and then attack that first civ again and liberate them. And then they will definitely love you for the Diplo victory, as long as you don't actually take any cities along the way.
Yeah. It's lowly, so it's, you know.
It's there. It's possible.
Yeah, no doubt.
Otherwise, XCOM units, woo!
Even more fun than giant death robots with Bushido.
Yeah, that's right. It applies to all Japanese units, not just uniques and or up to a specific point in the eras. Nope. Applies to all. Wow.
Nope.
Recorded for episode 219 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, and Mad Jin.
Klasker and I started a natural wonder tier list. Wants to making a tier list of all the natural wonders since there's been some discussion about this lately and somebody had suggested it to him. He says, since we can all agree that the rating of the natural wonders depends on what kind of game you're playing, you know, more production sometimes, more this, that, you know. So his list is going to try and rank you. Oh, it's a list. No wonder Dan likes this.
Mm-hmm. Although, I am going to point out that this is a non-standard CFC list, because if you're going to do a tier list on CFC, you know that it has to be of a certain style where people vote up or down things, and it takes forever to get the thread done. That is how you do a tier list on CFC.
Well, what? Because he actually just straight out and made the list instead of waiting for all the votes? What?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Look, the fact that it said list was good enough for me. Standard, non-standard, non-sequitur to me.
Yeah.
No anyway, so this list was going to try and rank each wonder by the average usefulness in a player's game, keeping in mind that most normal games go past 2100 and Mortal, Pangea, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, is that like Mackie's equivalent of yada, yada, yada?
Yada, yada, yada.
Oh, we'll start at the beginning. It's easier to scroll downwards than have to scroll back up.
Fair enough.
So what he rated for number one was the Fountain of Youth, because 10 happiness. There's no game where 10 happiness is not useful, ever. Of course, you also have to have massive luck skill to get this to spawn.
And don't forget the double healing.
Yes.
That's just a little tiny benefit.
Yes, 10 happiness, double healing, but also massive luck skill needed. So good luck actually getting that one.
Well, it's massive luck skill to get any natural wonder close to you.
Yes. It isn't claimed by a city state.
He did say he's going to try to rank each wonder by the average usefulness of a player's game. If we were going to rank them based on the frequency that they were going to appear, this list would
be very different. But just assume that you found it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that you can actually get it in your borders.
Yeah, that too. We'll get to the most infamous natural wonder for that eventually on this list.
Well, hey, the next thing on the list, you don't even have to have it in your borders to gain a benefit because Skill Dorado. Yay.
Whee.
500 gold that early so you can get the free settler and you do get some culture out of it if it does actually happen to fall on your borders. But actually, it's better if it's just somewhere on the map and you find it first.
Mm, true. Because yield wise, it's kind of low compared to...
Yeah, wouldn't you be able to build
It's higher than some stuff, but it's slower than a lot. Just total yield.
Yeah, because it's 5 culture only, nothing else.
But the 500 gold off the mark. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Really early in the game, second settler.
Boom.
Done. Or super skill Dorado and be Spain and get 2.
Yeah.
10 culture.
Yeah, and see, for that reason, like, he puts Fountain of Youth and then El Dorado. I kind of tempted to flip those two between 1 and 2, but I don't object to Fountain of Youth being number 1 and number 2. It's kind of, it's almost assured that someone is going to find El Dorado relatively quickly on the map, because it's the first person that finds it.
And then you just sell some resources to them to get all the gold, so whee!
In terms of usefulness for the player, I think that for the snowball effect purposes, okay, El Dorado, because you get the 500 gold as soon as you find it, not as soon as you work it, then okay, I would put El Dorado at number one.
Yeah, but that's just... It is questionable. I would still probably think Fountain of Youth is number one, because it's the long-term benefit, and having the happiness available to take care of all of those extra cities, probably still more useful. And then again, 5 extra culture that early in the game, if you actually settle near it, that could
if you wanted a cultural victory.
Look at my cultural victory on turn 10.
Or even not just, or almost any victory. Let's get more social policies, please, Kay, thanks. Number 3 on his list, I'm assuming it's a his list.
Yes. Great Barrier Reef. Because you get 2 of them, actually, and they're actually great tiles to work.
2-2, 1-1.
Yeah, but you get a little bit of everything.
Or 2-1-1.
And that's better than generally what you have in the ocean tiles.
True.
Yeah, so if you get both of those and work, well, okay, so now you've got 4 food, 2 production, 2 gold, and 4 science.
Yeah, and you can bump up the food because it is on the water, and if you...
Yeah, do the lighthouse, it counts.
Yeah, lighthouses and... Yep.
Yeah, so they can get better. They're not bad to start with, and they can get better, and they're more useful than the normal coast and ocean tiles that you get.
Yep. Although sometimes the second Great Barrier Reef can't be put within range of the city, depending on how it spawns.
I would say, based on my own experience, there's a 50-50 chance you're not going to be able to work that second Great Barrier.
So I don't know if it would be number 3. Frankly, I would shove that down somewhere in the 8-7 range.
Yeah, I put it kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the next 3 are all something we are all after.
Next 4.
Four.
Anyway.
Oops, sorry. I didn't scroll down far enough to see that. Well.
And there's more.
Let's see, number four, Shripada. You get faith, and you get happiness, and you get a little bit of food.
I disagree with his the best of faith wonders.
I disagree as well.
Four faith per turn is nice, but...
That's just like, what, a couple of temples or something?
Well, you can get eight out of Mount Sinai. So.
Yeah, and both Uluru and Mount Kaliash are both six, plus a little bit extra. So that's still even better.
Yeah, I mean, Mount Kalish is six faith, two happiness, which is two faith less than Shripada, but also missing out on two food. But who cares? I just make a granary and I've got the two food. I don't really care about the tile food-wise for that respect. Early game, you need faith. Mm-hmm. Later in the game, it's okay if it's a little less faith because you have other stuff to generate faith and you've already got your religion. But
Yeah, but helping to be first to Pantheon, first to religion.
Yeah.
First. Snowball.
I will take Mount Sinai's eight over of the other ones.
Yeah, this is basically four through seven we're discussing here.
Yeah.
It's all the faith wonders.
Yay! And I would put the faith wonders in that range because getting a Pantheon to start with and then religion early in the game is extremely
important.
Even
if it's just Shripada next to you, that's four more you're earning than everybody else.
Except for those people who found
Uluru. Yeah, who got Uluru or Mount Kailash or Mount Sinai. Yes. But you know.
Or met the city-states. The religious city states.
Yes.
Okay, let's say for a moment that even if you get one of these faith-based national wonders and you start working them, that you don't actually get a religion. And part of me would be thinking, but why? But even if that's the case, then you're more likely to get a Pantheon first, or at the very least more quickly. Each city that you then settle is going to have that Pantheon. And then you're just going to help to accumulate all of this faith so that when a religion does come to you, hopefully there's some religious buildings attached to to that faith. And then you can just be like, oh, look at all this faith I've got banked.
Well,
buy building.
In that case, if you did not get a religion for some strange reason, but you do have a severely high faith output, it's called how fast do I hit the industrial area and just buy all my great people. I will take an engineer for this wonder. I will take an engineer for that wonder.
Well, there's that too.
Very worth it.
Speaking of massive.
Yeah, Mount Kilimanjaro. Forget what the tile actually yields. The great thing about this one is wandering on hills bonus. It's like, oh, that's a hill. That's cute. I can just walk right over that normally now. Ha ha.
It's always nice to get your artillery-type units to go past Kilimanjaro.
Let me set up on this hill over here where I can see really good. Oh, you can't hit me from here. Oh, too bad. Oh, look, I already set up and hit your city.
Well, it's also, hey, look, this hill pretends like it's a road, so I can move onto the hill and take half a movement cost, set up, and I still have half a movement left.
Which is enough to go pew pew.
Yeah.
Yeah, like El Dorado, this is a natural wonder whose real benefit comes from just being beside the dang thing.
Yeah, don't actually have to have it in your borders.
And as compared to El Dorado, it doesn't matter if you're not first to it.
Yeah, everybody can use it.
Just make sure that no one blocks you away from it.
Yeah, the part where you want it in your borders, you want to lock it down so no one else uses it.
Yeah.
Although as long as you can still get beside it, even if it's someone else's borders, you can still benefit from it, so long as you can get to it.
Yeah.
I mean, the three food and two culture... It's okay,
it's a nice tile, but it's five yield versus a lot of the other ones, which are at least six.
I'll go drop a great general eight. With a citadel next to it, so it's in my borders. Hee hee.
It's always mine. But yeah, road right past it so that things don't take long to get there.
Yep.
And then back. Doesn't matter where it is on the map. All units
Mount Kilimanjaro training tip. You will all learn how to get on hills.
Yep.
Let's see.
Speaking of a buff.
Yeah, number nine is King Solomon's Mines. I don't know about that. He's saying he put this higher than Lake Victoria because you can get a lot of production from it with just a little population and doesn't require a city placement with good production tiles and stuff. And I'm like, but Lake Victoria, man.
Yeah, Lake Victoria he puts lower on King Solomon's Mines, down at 11 instead of 9 as he has for King Solomon's Mines. Lake Victoria is 6 food. No. Lake Victoria is better.
Yeah,
it's not just the...
It's that snowball effect. It's not just about the extra food and about the extra hammers. It's about the growth and the extra of everything that you get from that.
Well, yeah, he says that he put Lake Victoria lower because you can work it as a pop one and just hard build a granary. While with Lake Victoria, you have to grow. But the thing is, if you work King Solomon's Mines from Pop 1, you're still going to be Pop 1.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're on Lake Victoria and you work Lake
Victoria,
you're
going to be Pop 5 really fast.
Plus all those other tiles that you're working as you're building. Yes, it'll take longer to get the greenery, but Lake Victoria itself
is worth
more than the granary.
Yes. Lake Victoria is three granaries.
Or you could work Lake Victoria and work all the production tiles around you that can be worth more than King Solomon's Mine combined, except that you'll also have more pop, which means more science. So
gotta think about that snowball effect. Mount Fuji was squished here in the middle. It's another faith wonder. 2 gold, 3 culture, 3 faith. It's not bad.
It used to suck when it didn't have faith, but now it's not so bad.
Yeah. And he points out having one with nature helps, too.
One with nature helps with all of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Somebody forgot to point that out.
Yeah, one with nature does not mean that you have to have faith before you can choose one with nature. You can put one with nature on any of the natural wonders. I find that completely useless as a discussion point.
Well, as a specific discussion point for any natural wonder specifically. Because he uses that as part of his argument for his ranking for Mount Fuji. But yeah, that's for any natural wonder, and that's +4 faith for anyone forgetting.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so you skip over now past Lake Victoria to Old Faithful.
See, nice. I don't understand why, because I'm going to jump down here, why Sarodaputsi is way at the bottom of the freaking list.
Yeah, he put it at 15 out of 17, a 10 gold, and I'm just like, absolutely not.
I'm going 10 gold in the early part of the game. Are you kidding?
That's a top 10er right there.
I'm going 10 gold. I can buy that tile for 200 and some odd gold, and I will get it all back in 22 turns. And then there's another three, you know, however many turns, like 150 to 80 turns to go. Like, that's
cash money
for one tile.
Yes.
Yeah, and after what Brave New World did with trade routes and gold on the map, Sarodaputsi just became that much more desirable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot less gold on the map. And because you have Sarodaputsi in a city, if you make that a trade-based city, you might actually get a lot of people sending you trade routes.
So yeah, Old Faithful was the 2 beakers and 3 happiness. I mean, the happiness is nice, but...
I would never actually work Old Faithful because 2 science for the cost of everything else. It and Behringer Crater, I tend not to work at all. If I want to throw away 2 food for 3 science, okay.
Specialist.
Yeah.
Yeah, Behringer Crater, 2 gold and 3 science.
Or I could just go for a specialist. With rationalism and such. So, yeah. I mean, realistically, there's a couple wonders in here that are not as wondrous.
Like Krakatoa, because we never get to use it.
There's that infamous one that is almost never workable, which is too bad because it is 5 beakers. And if it was early enough...
It would be very nice. But the most time, it's not. And we can't. We all react when it happens in a game like, oh, screenshot, I can't believe this happened. It's workable. Oh, my God. Yeah,
I can't believe he actually puts Krakatoa that high on the list for that reason.
That should be the bottom of the list.
Well, no, no.
I think he's assuming you can use the wonder.
Yeah,
but still.
Because 90% of the time, you could never use the wonder.
Yeah, I know we're not supposed to count that, but with Krakatoa, we kind of have to count that because even though they've fixed it, supposedly, still... Most of the time.
Yeah, he's got Krakatoa at 13. If you could actually work it...
More often.
Got it at 13. I might put it at 10 or 11. It's too bad that it's so difficult to find and that it's workable. Because 5 science, if it's early on enough in the game and you could settle it and then be able to work it, that's a pretty impressive boost early on in the game.
That is similar to a rationalist specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Worth it. I don't understand his Rocky of Gibraltar comment. 2 food, 5 gold for Rock of Gibraltar. He says, don't go out of your way to settle this, though, as the gold is not extremely useful.
If it's early enough.
He just doesn't like gold, man, because he's got Sarodaputsi after it. But
Yeah.
Like, the 2 food does make up for the fact that you're working a gold tile, because then it at least pays for itself food-wise. But 5 gold is still not a horrible thing early in the game.
Yeah, you're in the first 100 turns of the game. It's still a very good tile for you to go settle for. If we're talking about it's later on and it's off some middle of nowhere, well, no, don't go settle it. I mean,
Tile Island.
With Rock of Gibraltar and something. I've seen that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Rock of Gibraltar and the mountain. There you go.
Settle right on it, LOL.
But the absolute worst on the list, and I absolutely have to agree this counts as the worst, even if you do have the option on it, the Grand Mesa down at...
Oh, yeah.
It's so bad, he didn't even bother putting in the symbols for it.
The only one, you are demoted from symbol status.
Yep.
2 production and 3 gold. Wow, I just can't even.
Yeah, no, it's a hill. You could just put a mine on a hill and get more yield out of it. or put a trading post on a hill and get more yields out of it. It is the least wondrous of wonders.
It is also the most ironically named.
Mm. It's grand. No, it's not.
Well,
it's a grand disappointment.
Yeah, there you go.
It does cause your progress to plateau. So there you
yeah.
go.
I approve.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, the 3 extra gold early in the game can be useful, but you're also stopping your growth because you're using it, and it's only 2 production, which is nice, but you can get a hill and mine it and get more production, which means,
And it doesn't give you anything else.
Yeah.
It's like Old Faithful, you get the happiness, you don't have to work there.
Yeah, I mean, there is at least happiness near you. And even some other ones that I put way higher, like Mount Kilimanjaro's yields are but the bonus is nice.
Although those yields are still, I would say, better than Grand Mesa, if you're talking
because you get more food and culture. Yeah.
Yeah, because when it comes to the yields, it's what would you have to do otherwise to get that output from a tile, if that's possible?
Or what alternatives can you work?
See, for me, when it comes to yield combo with effect, like if it is yield effect combo, then any of the wonders that are in the 10 to, say, even down to 7, I would say, if they have from 7 through 10 yields, then great, they don't need a side effect. If it's from 6 through 5, then they absolutely need a bonus side effect. And frankly, realistically, nothing should ever be down at 5. The natural wonders are supposed to be a couple around the map, and they're supposed to be big and powerful. If you can put yields way better than natural wonder, then they're not really that wondrous.
Yeah, how do we specialize cities in Beyond Earth? Because, what? Can't kind of don't exactly do that. The guy started this is, I'm going to call him Buddha.
Buddha?
Yeah.
Buddha.
Yeah, there's no H. No H, you're not Buddha.
That's probably the actual pronunciation. Buddha.
So he says that he remembers back in Civ 4 that it made sense to specialize each city because of multiplication bonuses, but in Beyond Earth he sees almost no any bonuses. Oops. Whoa. The question is the need of specialization. He remembered something that gave plus 15 science to a city, which maybe you want to specialize that one in science, but other than that, he was any multiplication bonuses? There's things.
Yeah, there are buildings that allow you to work specialists. They're not as
useful.
Not as useful. They're not as frequent.
We're not talking about rocket generating scientists involving like a quarter or a third of the tech tree either.
Yeah, that too.
No.
There's a couple way to actually specialize in specialists in Beyond Earth are still a waste of time. They provide exactly 2 of the yield, and unless you take the virtue that gives them energy, they still eat the same amount of food as everything
You'd
else.
You'd still be better off having them work a tile.
Yeah, because you can get that yield off a tile. Like, if you go for a science specialist, you can just build yourself an array, or an academy, if you really feel like it. And the array will actually give you more yields total than the specialists, and potentially also, depending on the tile that's on, might even give you the food to counter the fact that it's being worked. So generator spam is far better than any trader specialist. 7 yield off that versus 2 when it eats 2. Kind of useless. So realistically, there are a couple ways to specialize. You can specialize generator spam or science spam if you want external trade routes, because if you have super high science or super high energy, then there's a good chance that that's a good city for trade routes based on the formula. Though with the way trade route formulas work right now, it's kind of backwards. So you're kind of hoping people send trade routes to you by you building up like a mega energy or science city. There are some percent buildings in the game, though generally not so high comparative to Civ 5 or even Civ 4. So you're not aiming for like plus 100% science or energy or anything like that. You're looking like maybe plus 30, plus 40.
They may or may not be where you want them to be on the tech web for what you would otherwise.
Yeah, that's
do.
Part of the short list that's in here. Either it's resources you can't spare extras of, or it's off your affinity tech path, or it's on a tech path that goes nowhere that you need for this game, or the tech that unlocks is expensive, or it needs too many affinity levels, and therefore it comes in so late.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things of you build everything everywhere anyways, because a lot of it's just flat yield. So if you're building everything everywhere anyways, and the build costs tend to be low, so it's fairly straightforward to do that, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, the maintenance in B doesn't seem as harsh, because it's like I can go around and build all these things, and maybe the things
generator
I can...
spam.
Yeah, there's ways to get around that. So it's not like in Civ 5 where you had to streamline, or even Civ 4 when you had wanted to streamline things. Don't build all these excess buildings in every city. And this was like, just build everything, dude. Throw kitchen sink approach.
The funny thing is, though, like Civ 5 is the one where it was prohibited from a money angle to a degree. There is no money cost to buildings in Civ 4 at all, but the opportunity cost was too great. That kind of thing just isn't there in Beyond Earth right now. And the most you're going to be doing with city specialization is gouging one yield so that you can trade route micro it to other cities.
Like, you're still going to specialize a city that has a high amount of yield. If you land in a production zone, tons of hills, tons of titanium or whatever based production, then you're still going to specialize that for building units. But as Civ Specialist also mentions, orbital units is really the point where you're going to start specializing things, because you can only put a single orbital unit over an area. And if you really want the city to be doing something, you're not going to be able to spam them all. So like solar collectors, you can only get that over your city for financial for the plus 20%. You can't.
Yeah, but you throw it over here where you have all the generators. You throw the one with the food over here where you've got all the farms. The radius isn't so big that you couldn't get more than one around the city. You may not actually be able to hit the city tile itself, but...
Well, the solar collector and the laser comm, it actually requires being over the city. Mm. So for that extra bonus, like the solar collector itself will still give you plus one energy on the tiles, but you need it covering the city. Same for the laser comm and the space telescope. So on that note, you can only get one over the city, and therefore that drives your specialization.
Prioritize those.
Yeah, but weather control and orbital fabricators, yeah, those don't require being over a city, so you can just dump them wherever. Although they are also in a tech path that leads to nowhere, and it's very expensive for what you get out of it and for the length of time, but you can still get extra production and extra food out of it, even if you don't necessarily get an extra resource out of it. Or like Holomatrix, bam that. Tachnet hubs and planet carvers and stuff like that, I don't consider that the specialization, but at some point you may have to actually fight, and preferably those are not next to your city.
Those are specialization is in destroying the other cities.
Yeah. Those are preferably not directly over your cities, because at that point you're in trouble.
Death from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
Yeah. Otherwise, some of the affinities do provide some specializations. Like Supremacy will give you more unique buildings stacked on top of other stuff for science. And if you get like two levels of Harmony plus lots of Supremacy, you can take the Harmony boost to percent science, the two Supremacy boosts to science, and go from there. Supremacy also has the science building, the bonus towards extra science based on your affinity level. Purity is very focused towards production. Harmony is more focused towards food. And it also sort of depends on where your city is, because there are buildings that give you lots of energy if you're on the coast and you have LG. And therefore, since it's also a coastal city, you get those super long sea trade routes. So that's a good trade hub versus other stuff. Also, the problem with specialization, a lot of those special buildings require specific resources.
That was one thing that was on the list. And sometimes you can't spare the extras.
Or it has to be within range of the city.
Oh, yeah. Like with the tectonic anvil, you'd better have a canyon next to the city.
Yeah. More specifically, you need Phyraxite for the science stuff or culture. You need your Xenomass if you're Harmony. If you're going Harmony and you don't have Xenomass near your cities, you're going to have issues for a lot of stuff. I mean, that's really where the orbital fabricator comes in handy, if you're willing to go that far, because you can just use orbital fabricators to get all those unique resources spammed around your cities. But yeah, don't use specialists. It's just bad.
Not always.
Well, I mean, if you are trying to limit your growth, then I guess you could.
Yeah, if you're limiting your growth and you're getting the energy bonus from it, then they're not terrible as a stopgap measure.
Yeah.
It's also nice when you have the Purity Farm full bonus update and you've got like 36 pop or something like that.
Well, yeah.
I have run out of tiles to work, and it's time for specialists.
Well, yeah, you might find yourself growing to a point where it's like, okay. Maybe the specialist is actually going to be better. I know it's not as likely. It is a way to specialize when you're kind of like, okay, what else can I possibly do to help give this city a particular advantage and then give my empire an overall advantage?
Yeah.
It would be a lot better if you still had the two hexes between city and roll and you just had a gross carpet of cities with food, because at that point the specialists would start to become a valid replacement for working tiles, because you wouldn't have any tiles to work much earlier.
It sort of depends, because... Yeah.
But it's not like that any longer, and hasn't been in Beyond Earth, ever.
No, you want big cities in Beyond Earth, and you want them spread out. You have a choice. Will you, when you take over a city, because you have to go domination, or at least you need to clean up neighbors' expansion, still in Beyond Earth, do you raise or do you puppet? He throws this as an extra, and do I need to annex, and why? It's not in the title of the thread. Raise or puppet? Oh, yeah, maybe. Should I annex? In Beyond Earth, the most important change is that there is no courthouse, so you don't have to worry about doing that. So annex is actually a viable option. And of course, the fact that annexing gives you a period of time, I think it's 1.2 or 1.3 times the population worth of time of martial law, whereas if you puppet, it's only half before it's useful, and that's before its useful time. But if you choose to annex after you puppet, it adds an extra an amount equal to the pop of martial law and craziness. Again, puppet followed by annex is actually worse than just straight up annexing for the how many turns will it take before the city is useful.
Which is counterintuitive if you think about Civ 5.
Well, if you think about Civ 5, you always want a puppet because if you
Civ
annex right off the
mark. Terrible balance with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Annexing right off the mark was basically the game developer's way of trapping new players. Because, you know, when you annex right off the mark, you can't build that courthouse. You can't do anything until it's done. So there was no point in ever pressing that annex button right off the mark. Whereas you always just pop it. And then once it's cleaned up, you hit the annex button, you buy your courthouse, and you go.
This is better balance, because if you put an option in a game that's always bad, it's always never the option to choose, then why is it here?
Yeah.
It's called false choice.
You can choose, but you can also be an absolute idiot by choosing.
This editorial brought to you by Mech.
Yeah, I was kind. I said new players, because as soon as you ever do that and you find out how bad it is, players tend not to do that again, unless you accidentally click. I have misclicked a few times.
So, or you get the auto-annex bug.
Yeah, you get that problem.
Dan's favorite.
Yeah, his favorite. So it is more of a choice. And raising also has its own issues. It gives you twice the amount of unhappiness for the period of time it's raising. But once they're dead, they can't be unhappy anymore. So it is a valid option. The question from Ken is, when should we do this with Beyond Earth? Given that Beyond Earth is a major expansion style game, not a four-city and I can still win game. The basic answers that he's given is burn anything down that's just garbage. There's no point in trying to keep it. Raise and replace is actually a viable option. You don't need to keep the cities, even if the AI put it there, because the AI is still likely to put cities in bad locations. But as the
game
goes, maybe
if there's a wonder there, but it's a good wonder, but that's about it.
Well, it depends on what it is. Like, if it has a wonder, you normally want to keep that. If it's in a good location and has been built up, then choice of annex or puppet just depends on whether or not you want to use that city. If you do want to use the city, then annex right away and you can take it. Otherwise, you can puppet it and let it just make yield for you. Puppets actually make really good trade locations just because they always go energy focus still. So you can just generate or spam around it, toss it a few trade routes and wander away.
And it's also possible the city that you have taken is going to give you access to a particular resource that you might not otherwise have access to or be your primary source of, and that aligns, for example, with your affinity choice, then okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you go through the game, raise early, unless you can't raise it, like to capital. Puppet for now, but just keep in mind that don't puppet now and then try and annex it 100 turns later after it's grown way bigger than it needed to be.
No.
Because that'll
do just you like pain? This is an option for you.
Otherwise, it's actually a rather valid choice to annex things that annex cities that are bigger rather than puppet. Although the later in the game, eventually once you get towards the late game, then it's generally not worth it to annex unless you really, really need that city to be accessible for you to build stuff, because the amount of turns it'll take to get out of its cranky phase may actually be more than the amount of time left in the game. When cities start hitting 20 to 30 pop, those ones tend to be, yeah, whatever, we'll just puppet this. Unless it's still before, as Jekozilla said, turn 150 or 200, somewhere in there. At some point, you stop needing to annex because you'll never actually use the city.
Yeah, for direct control, because you got to look at, like you said, how many turns is it going to be in martial law? And then based on its production output and production capability, is this kind of the equivalent of how many units or how many buildings am I going to have to then be able to construct to say that it was worth all of those turns of martial law? Even in the later game, you might be better off saying, hey, this is a nice spot. I haven't settled there. Why don't I go ahead and settle that and then start really pushing improvements so that you can grow the city and work the tiles and or specialists or whatever, and then just construct in there.
What you guys are saying does not make sense.
30 to 40% of the gameplay, at least, maybe even half of it, is micromanaging your trade routes. And if you don't annex the city, then how are you going to get more trade routes to micromanage in the late game?
You build it somewhere else and transfer the trade route?
No, you've got to get that trade depot up as fast as possible in case you destroyed it.
Well, depends.
Then you need to build more trade units from the annexed city as well. So you need to make sure that you have as many trade routes as you can possibly have in the late game.
You don't have to
just build... Just so that you can micromanage more trade routes.
You don't have to build...
This comment feels slightly trolly for some reason.
But just in case anyone thought Phil was serious.
Beep, beep, beep. Troll detector going off.
Yeah. Although the trade depot part is an issue. Because you can't buy it. You can't buy it. Puppets, I think it's relatively early in the list of things that they want to build, but defensive buildings and stuff like that almost always go first. So, yeah, puppets are a bit more annoying to get control of.
You're like, we don't want to be taken over a second time.
So roll the dice on whether or not you burn down the trade depot or whether or not the AI built it in the first place.
AI. Derp. Was I supposed to build that? Derp.
Turncast 2014 listener feedback survey. When we talked about the 2014 listener feedback survey for Polycast, one of the comments was, we'd like to hear more about your games. And then as was brought up by Phil and Mackie, there's this thing called Turncast. And so Turncast is our cooperative multiplayer podcast. We've had 13 episode seasons. Most episodes are 10 minutes where we string together bits and pieces of many hours of recordings. There were five questions, the first being, how do you rate Turncast on passion, which was also a question for Polycast. So showing excitement, what is being said? And the average response was 8.4 out of 10. And for dialogue, connecting to the show's audience, that was 8.7. That was very nice to see. And yes, there were, quote unquote, only 13 responses to this. The most contested question, which was also the case for Polycast, to be quite honest, comparable question, was a mix of play between Civilization V and Civilization Beyond Earth is an ongoing effort for Turncast. So in order of preference, what do you feel the balance should be? And Civilization V first and then Beyond Earth 1, but by a margin of 7-6.
Yeah.
Just kind of like on Polycast, if we talk about Civ 5, roughly half of our potential audience is going to be like, blah! And if we talk about Beyond Earth, then the other half is going to be like, blah!
Although if we talk about Civ 4, they're all going to be blah.
I'll talk about Civ 4 anyway, because that is my nature.
The last two questions had to do with individual personalities. Fourth question being about what recurring players would you like to see back on the show? And the only person across any Polycast podcast survey to get 100% of the votes. Congratulations to Canis, who just happens to be joining us on this episode.
Fix.
13 people said they wanted Canis to be back onto the show. Now, you can't always get what you want, folks. No, it's zero. Yeah.
What did you do today?
Everybody. I want to thank everybody who voted for me.
That's it? Really?
Okay, what do you want me to say?
More. More.
Yes, talk about why you're better than everyone else on the list.
Because I am not. Probably because everybody keeps thinking I'm a girl.
Oh.
You know, that would explain so much.
Well, that does explain a few votes.
It happens all the time. There have been times on Turncast where we have had people say, are you a girl? Or assume I'm a girl.
I wish I was around for that. I did not realize that that was a thing.
It's happened at least three times.
And you can say, yes, I am a guy in real life. Like, and that actually is true. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the best part is not when they ask, are you a girl? Or someone says, oh, I assumed Canis was a girl. It's just when they refer to Canis as she in the midst of conversation that has nothing to do with the topic.
Canis is like,
wait, she?
I don't know how her war is going.
And Phil, you were in second. You had 12 out of 13.
You got beat by one.
I think my After Dark stuff is just too attractive to people that can't keep away from it. It's like a moth to the flame, and man, is there a flame.
But you only showed up on one episode, so...
I know.
Yeah, there were quite a few people, including you, Magin, that only showed up on the one episode, which was a compilation of clips from actually all the way back to 2008. Essentially, portions of recordings that I previously deemed too hot for a previous release.
Mm-hmm. No wonder I found my way up there.
Yeah, but on the whole moon vote, I don't know, because Lisa and Sandy are both fairly high on this list, and neither of them have been anywhere near Polycast for a long time.
Yeah, but there's also...
And Annalie. Yeah. that you?
Well, yeah, I see. And a number of these cases. Now, Anna Lee was just on the episode 50, which was also the only episode you were on, Magin, last year from recordings from before, which got you into a three-way tie with Grimvec and Fuzzy Fractal 42. Congratulations, Fuzzy and Grim. Not going to congratulate Magin because, well, I don't know why. I mean,
because I stopped doing
other things.
But sometimes when you listen to a Turncast episode, some of the clips, just, you know, a regular episode can be 6 to 12 months old.
Yeah.
So sometimes there's kind of like, wait, we haven't heard that person in a while. Well, there's that time differential there. And then the very last question below are those who served as Turncast regular players during 2014. Who is your favorite? And congratulations to Mackie, who doubled my score compared to 6-3, and Uber Mark Lars as well. Uber and I were tied for second.
I was on both lists again, and I forgot to retweet this. That actually would have cheated again.
Cheater!
And the reason why you were able to be on the regular players list, whereas on Polycast, the year that you became a regular co-host, it was partway through the year, it's because of how I phrased it. So mm-hmm. You know, those who served as regular players during 2014, as opposed to who is your favorite regular co-host, like we do on Polycast, mm-hmm. because by the time the survey came about, you were a regular co-host, so I phrased it differently. Mm-hmm. There we go. And there's the Turncast 2014 listener feedback survey. But just like with Polycast, I think the real quote-unquote feedback comes to when we look at the download numbers. And I'm not going to start rhyming off percentages here or anything like that. But year over year, the numbers are continuing to improve for both Polycast and Turncast. So, hey.
Yay.
Forward march.
Upward is good.
I could build a spaceship. I mean, starship. I mean, wait. So we now have, you know, we've already had Sid Meier's railroads, all these other things. Now we have Sid Meier's spaceships.
Ooh, starship, actually. But
starship. Yes, sorry. Starships. Sorry. Channeling and Lenny from the Lego movie again. Spaceship.
No. You cannot build.
Scheduled to arrive in early 2015, the turn-based game is coming to PC, Mac, and iPad. And I'm reading from the GameSpot article. And I'm like, oh. So it's coming to iPad, but it's not to come to Android, or at least there's no word about Android.
Yeah, there are other tablets, guys. Thanks a lot.
Android doesn't dominate the market.
It's what I have. I want an Android version so it'll work on my Kindle.
You should not be using a Kindle.
Why?
It's not a tablet. It's a reader.
Oh, sorry. Kindle Fire, if you want me to be technical about it.
Yes,
which
I do.
Is a tablet. Shut up.
No.
Publisher 2K teases that Beyond Earth and Starships will feature cross-connectivity for people who own both games. They won't go into specifics, but says that this integration will, quote-unquote, enhance and expand upon both game experiences, which is, I wouldn't say it's the only reason we're talking about this, but...
It's the only reason we're talking about this.
Except it's Sid. No, Sid made it.
Okay.
That's the important
thing. We don't cover everything Sid on this show just because it's Sid. It just happens to be that everything Sid recently has been Civ related.
Well, except for Air Patrol.
Most of what has been. Once we get more specifics on what that exactly means, the connectivity with Beyond Earth, I think that'll determine in considerable part how much we're going to cover it on this show. But it is space, and Beyond Earth is also space.
Yeah.
And there is a connection mentioned, so it's worth noting.
Gotta go to space.
My prediction is that Starships is just Ace Control or Ace Patrol, whatever it's called.
In space.
In space. I'm pretty sure it's pretty much the same game.
Yes.
I wouldn't say it's pretty much the same game, because that would be silly. Yeah.
They did release Ace Patrol and then Ace Patrol Pacific Skies, which were basically the same game.
Yeah, but that's both under the Ace Patrol. I mean, if it was Ace Patrol Stars, then okay, you could probably say that. But otherwise, I mean, for the connection to Beyond Earth, there's two obvious things in the trailer. One, it's post Beyond Earth. And two, it's in the same canon as Beyond Earth. So it's after Beyond Earth. And apparently Purity won.
Yay.
What?
Woohoo!
Well, if you read some of the comments, it's like, oh, that looks like a Purity ship.
Well, it kind of makes sense, because if you're Harmony, why would you want to leave the planet that you just spent the whole time trying to get in connection with?
Yeah, and if you made contact, why would you...
Maybe I want to spread my harmoniousness to other planets.
But also, the important point is that it actually did mention that there were other planets also seeded, and they sucked. because apparently they lost. Those are the planets where you've lost. If you lost the game. And this is the planet where you won the game. Going off to find out what happened. Like, we got a signal. Oh, no, actually, those are the planets where they put the contact victory, except that it actually called you instead. And the Purity is like, dude, we're all still human here.
Dina wants to know, Mackie, do you want to go to space?
Space. Gotta go to space. Space. Space.
I think the question really should be, Mackie, do you want to come back from space?
Probably at some point. There are things on Earth that are not in space.
Chocolate? Coffee?
Mm-hmm. I'd have to take a lot with me. There's not enough room on the spaceship. I'd have to come back for supplies.
Are you sure there's no coffee on that star in the vicinity of Betelgeuse?
Just need to get the...
Jeez.
I knew someone was going to do that.
Yeah.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Did you just segue yourself?
I segued myself. Yeah, look at
that. Yeah, this is a family-friendly show.
Oh, and segueing other people is better than segueing yourself?
It's more natural.
What?
If you don't learn to segue yourself, how can you have other... Okay, let's okay.
I don't want to be here anymore.
Hey, guys, let's have a three-way segue. Yes.
I don't think they can carry the weight.
What are you trying to say, Canis?
Now it was destroyed, damn segue.
Yes.
Destroyed it, wrecked it.
We destroyed it till we came in like a wrecking ball.
No, my
Mackie.
All right, I mentioned Christine earlier. Mackie mentioned.
Although
Miley,
if you didn't do it, I would have. So I'm more surprised it was you.
Let's both get the orbital facepalm cannon.
Wait, they implemented that?
Mod.
I think Canis might have something to say about you trying to get.
I was going
to
say it's mine.
No. We've known about the orbital facepalm cannon long before you showed up.
I've elicited it from Mackie multiple times.
Pretty sure Mackie never referred to it as the cannon, though.
May have.
Canis took the concept of the facepalm from Mackie and applied it on a grander scale.
Yes, I've definitely said so. Facepalm, but...
And then I gave Mackie the code to the facepalm cannon so she could use it whenever she wants, because, you know, she has the copyright to it.
Uh-huh.
And I find a lot of use for it around here, for some reason.
By the way, Mackie's ultimate food? Coffee-flavored cookies. Mmm. I have no idea.
I guess you could. Cookies of flavor, yeah.
They taste just like black coffee. Mmm, cookies.
Well, if you want something that just tastes like black coffee, just make a pressed cake out of the leftover grounds. There you go.
Actually, I was going to say, if you want something that tastes like black coffee, make coffee. But, okay, you want to go all crazy.
You want to do some actual work.
I'm
going to
go all crazy, duh.
I pictured doing that. It was awesome.
You can picture her making coffee? That's great.
This has been episode 220 of Polycast, and I'm joined by the usual crew of crazies, such as Dan Q.
Secret listener.
What? Imagine.
I was also here.
The me and team.
I wrecked you.
The wrecking ball is returned. And our guest host, Canis Albinus.
Something witty involving spearmen and tanks.
We have a Turncast flavor podcast. Oh, forget that.
Oh, a pod for my thingy. Yeah, sure. Why not? Turncast
stuff
flavor.
For your thingy? What?
Now we really are getting the Turncast material. I can't sing like her. My voice doesn't.
Who would have to hit himself in painful places to sing that?
Oh, Mackie, let's not go there.
Thanks for joining us, Candace. This was your second time on the show.
Yep.
So would you like to play Turncast with us? It's a thing that we do every Saturday night.
Yeah, seriously.
Would you like to play Turncast with us?
Yeah, seriously.
And just so you know, I am a girl, as in a guy in real life.
You're Phyllis.
What's up, Phyllis? Did you turn the stream off yet before we get into trouble?
Yes.
Record day, January 24th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.